Dunkin' Cold Coffee can be brewed at home in your Keurig coffee maker with Dunkin' Cold K-Cup Pods. Just brew it hot over ice and enjoy flavor that's crafted to serve cold. The home with Dunkin' is where you want to be.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at the coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Well, hey, hi, welcome back. Happy Friday. It is a good game, nice try. I'm Sonia and joined by my co-host who is shoving his face in the webcam, giving me a full view of his cornea, Aaron Blair.
You know what I feel like? I've been really lackadaisical about Zoom bits. I think when we first started this pandemic, we all got on Zoom. We're all talking to each other remotely. There's so many bits. We're all doing bits. Oh, look at my funny background. Oh, I recorded myself coming in and giving myself tea. All this stuff. Oh, I go down and then I come up and I'm going down the stairs.
The elevator, the stairs. Classics.
Classics. Over a year in this pandemic and we've all just given up our Zoom bits. Did you have any Zoom bits you started?
I mean, I just got really into virtual backgrounds. Although the problem being, I would throw something on and then forget to take it off and then join a like way more important meeting. And true. I would stroll up into something really serious and I'm in the middle of an in and out. But it's whatever, you know, neither here nor there.
Can I tell people about very early on when we first started working together, the Thanos thing. Can I tell people about this?
Absolutely.
So when you and I first started doing this podcast, and we didn't know each other very well because we didn't know each other before this podcast.
Right.
And now you're regretting every moment of our friendship.
But correct. Yes.
I don't remember how this came up. And I'll say it's probably my fault. But we were talking about Thanos. And we're talking about, you know what it was? Around this time, Josh Brolin had tweeted out a photo of Thanos and his bare butt.
You're really underselling it. It was like a massive, juicy ass.
Okay.
I really want to get fully.
It was.
Full description.
The Mad Titan's mad ass.
Thank
is
you.
Basically what it was. And so we were talking about this. And you and I, speaking of Zoom and speaking of gaming, you know, we have these gaming setups. And we have these lights. And these, they're these hue lights that you can change the color.
Mm-hmm.
And change it, you know, red, blue, all these different things and combinations. And there is you could upload a photo and Hue will take that photo and give it the perfect background, like the perfect thing.
Yeah, it takes the photo and then it picks like the top color, like the most prominent colors from it.
Yeah.
And then it spreads it across all of your Hue lights. So right. you have the essence of that photo.
That's right.
In your room.
That's right. And I think how it went down, I think, is I bought you like a blanket with Thanos's ass on it, like a huge blanket with just his ass, like a
huge
giant ass blanket. And then I think the next time we talked, you had changed your lights. You had uploaded Thanos's ass, his juicy ass, into the light app.
Uh-huh.
And so now you had the blanket with the color scheme.
It's a shrine.
It's a shrine to Thanos' ass. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's probably the best Zoom bit that's ever happened, I think, in the history of the world. That was
it was pretty good, but not as good as I was just checking on my Hue app. I also have one that you can't really see it, but in the bottom corner it says Rashy.
Okay, Rashy.
And it's a photo of your face.
Oh, no.
Where you said that you looked rashy, and we have a Hue palette based on your rashy face.
That's amazing.
That I can change at any time.
Holy shit. When you're, yes, that's both disturbing and very sweet, I think.
The future is now.
The future is now. Honestly, I think what we're learning from this conversation is you and I are Renaissance people. We're Renaissance people. Our interests are varied. We're into lights. We're into music. We're into games. We're into streaming, all this stuff. And I think, you know, our guest today, also a Renaissance person, but an actual Renaissance person who's doing things in many different disciplines.
Our guest today, he is a video game designer, and he's had a huge hand in creating massively successful games, including, you might have heard of it, Unreal and Gears of War. He is so talented and has had a massive impact on the gaming industry over the years. Enjoy our interview with Cliff Bleszinski. Well, Cliff, I'm so excited to talk to you today. What's up?
I'm just hanging out here in my VR space, you know?
Yeah. Hey, so are we kind of on Zoom right now.
Yeah, I was talking to you on Twitter last night about this. I haven't done a lot of this kind of stuff recently, so I am a little nervous, so bear with me.
I think you guys know each other. You guys kind of have a little history. How did you guys meet?
We met virtually online. Like basically, if somebody is like, you know, like an influencer or a cool personality, or a game developer, I follow them on social media, right? Then I followed Sonia, and I think the first time I met you was at the PC Gamer show in that theater in downtown Los Angeles.
Because
you were doing a fantastic job hosting, and I sent you a message like, wow, you're really, really good. And, you know, I had done my bit, and then you came out, and I was like, oh, this is my wife, Lauren, and this is Firefox. And you confidently looked at her and extended your hand and said, hi, I'm Sonia. Pleasure to meet you.
Oh, you make me sound way more regal in person.
And did you actually come to the Big Dumb Yacht Party at one point?
Yeah, a couple times.
That's right, yeah.
A couple times, actually.
Sorry, those are an entire blur. You get me around Justin Roiland and Alex Hirsch, and just the alcohol flows way too fast.
It's a blur. It is honestly just a blur. It's a tornado.
Don't you miss conventions?
I miss conventions, but I mostly just miss the Big Dumb Yacht Party. I'm not going to lie. Yeah. That's kind of the peak of Comic-Con.
Yeah, so for those of you who don't know, I became good friends with Justin Roiland from, of course, Rick and Morty, and now Solar Opposites, which is quite good, and Squanch Games, and Alex Hirsch, who did Gravity Falls. He actually worked on Mitchell's versus the Machines, which is on Netflix, and it's freaking the best animated movie I've seen in 5 years. It is so good. But we got together, and they were doing this for a while. They would rent a yacht at Comic-Con and throw a party with, like, you know, just interesting people. It doesn't necessarily have to be celebrities, but, you know, just cool people. And, you know, like one year they're like, hey, do you want to be like a co-sponsor? Because it's not the cheapest thing, but it ultimately wound up being one of the coolest, like, parties, like Machine Gun Kelly, Eric Andre, like the cast of Game of Thrones.
Weird Al?
Yeah, Weird Al was showed up at one point. Yeah, and it's just like, you know, Kelly Ripa and Mark Consuelos and the cast of Riverdale, like all these crazy.
It's like a dream I had once. Yeah, it's like, oh my God.
It is a fever dream.
But yeah, I mean, it's just like, for me, I don't get to run in those circles very often, and because I live in Raleigh, North Carolina. So when I get to dip out to like a New York event or an LA event, like I get to be in those circles, and it's incredibly exciting. And then go back to my sleepy little southern town and try and, you know, keep the state blue.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's so basically I just spent, you know, I've been, you know, kind of hanging out, like, you know, I get in two modes. I either get in like video gaming mode or I get in like reading mode. And like towards the tail end of winter here in North Carolina, the winters aren't too bad. I was just all about my Switch, like, you know, and everything. And a little bit of the history with that was, it was my saving grace because, and it's going to get a little dark for a second. The last year and a half, my wife and I had to go back to suburban Louisiana because her mom was diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer. And she unfortunately passed in December. And it was rough on all of us. But the silver lining was, you know, I had a lot of time to reflect and think. You know, I busted out my memoir, which is in the hands of Simon & Schuster right now. And basically my Switch kept me sane. But the big thing about the memoir, that my takeaway for that was, you know, I feel creative again, you know, and it's essentially a love letter to the video game industry, you know, because I literally was the kid in the 80s in New England, like Stranger Things, like playing the Atari 2600 and going to the arcade with a pocket full of French burnt peanuts and a bunch of quarters, right? And then, you know, kind of wanting to get into the industry. And then, you know, Tim Sweeney and Mark Rain took a chance on a, you know, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed 17-year-old who was, you know, eager to work and work his butt off for the video game biz. And then, you know, started my own studio. That didn't work out. But the thing is that I tweeted a while back that I'm working on new stuff, and everybody immediately assumed it would be a game. And it's like, dude, it's possible to kind of make IP, you know, as something as a graphic novel or, you know, a screenplay or a short story or something that could potentially be a Netflix series, could potentially be whatever, right? It doesn't necessarily have to be a game. I mean, games will always have my heart. But it's one of those things I've seen firsthand, the budgets. I've seen, you know, the stress that the industry causes. Got my first gray hairs when I started my studio, Boss Key. And, you know, I just, if I ever were to make another video game, it would have to be kind of on my own terms, right?
Yeah. And one thing Sonny and I discuss a lot is, you know, we like to think of ideas as water, and they can take the shape of the vessel that you pour them into. And so that could be a game, that could be a Broadway play, a musical, that could be a short story. And so that's the really exciting thing. And I think that's what's so fascinating too about video games and your career, having started so early at 15 and now how it's become such a venue for or an art form of storytelling. And yeah, now, right, your next project, like, what are the things you're excited about right now?
So idea-wise, the thing that excites me about what I want to do next is it's not really the stuff that's been in my wheelhouse. You know, mm-hmm. like, it, you know, I have ideas for video games that aren't shooters. Because, you know, even going back to Jazz, Sonia, you know, Jazz was...
Which I want to talk about for sure.
it was technically a shooter. And actually, we'll get to that in a second. And so the other thing is, you know, there's a movie thing that I might be, you know, noodling on with a very prominent Hollywood producer. He described sometimes the process in Hollywood as sometimes you just will things into existence, right? Mm-hmm. And my thing the last few years has been infiltrating other industries. You know, I'm fortunate enough to co-own two restaurants in town. Learning the secret to the restaurant business is to own the land, much like that movie The Founder with Michael Keaton about the McDonald's empire and Ray Kroc, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, seeing, you know, the behind the scenes of how Broadway's plays and musicals are capitalized, you know, the machinations of the Tonys. You know, I co-produced the revival of Terrence McNally's Frankie and Johnny and the Clair de Lune with Michael Shannon and Audra McDonald. And it's nominated for Best Revival. And the fun fact is, if it wins the Tony, I will get the trophy, but you actually have to pay for the fucking trophy. So that's
how
that works. Yeah, it's really how it works.
Is it expensive? I'm guessing.
Probably a few grand,
Oh my God.
But yeah, so I just, you know, I've been incredibly lazy, but somehow incredibly busy at the same time.
I would definitely not say incredibly lazy. I feel like, you know, it's been so exciting to see you, like you're saying, kind of branch out into different industries that aren't in your wheelhouse. Like when I saw you tweeting and sharing about getting into Broadway, it's something new and it's so exciting.
I just, Broadway is finally going to start reopening in September.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. And I'm also invested in the Mrs. Doubtfire musical, which should be good. And one of the things that I love... Like I've got my wife hooked on musicals, you know, the Mean Girls musical, Dear Evan Hansen, Hamilton, Six is amazing. Six is reopening in September. It's the story of Henry VIII's six wives. And it's basically an hour and a half historical Spice Girls concert. Right. So it is just filled with earworms of the wazoo. So it's one of those things that, you know, a lot of people know me for the video games that I've done, but I love just exploring other businesses and, you know, infiltrating, you know, Broadway, Hollywood and everything and beyond. Right.
Yes, absolutely. Plant a lot of seeds. And, with your, you know, most prominence being in gaming and in the video game industry, that's how I became to know you way before we knew each other. Actually, to go way, way, way back, the beginning of my gaming career, my gaming period, my interest in gaming, the first video game I ever played was Jazz Jackrabbit on DOS.
Oh, I knew you loved it, but I didn't know that it was actually the first one.
That was the first intro to gaming I've ever played. Aww. On my grandpa's old DOS computer.
Yep.
Way, way back. And, you know, Jazz Jackrabbit, Commander Keen.
Oh, yeah.
Crystal Caves, Wolfenstein, all of it back in the day. But yeah, that was the first game I ever played that really got my interest sparked in video games and kind of kicked off everything for me. So, you know, flash forward, you know, going into coding and trying to learn how to develop video games, and then stumbling into streaming and everything taking off there. We actually met at, I think it was a PC game. It might have been like a PC Gamer after show or like a E3 after show. It must have been 2015, maybe, or 2014. It was way before.
Before the anecdote that I just mentioned, where I introduced you to Lauren?
This is way earlier. And I saw you and I recognized you. And I was like, God, I love Jazz Tracker. I'm like, I have to say something. I have to say something to him. So I went up to you and I would assume that a lot of people, especially at that time, kind of knew you for Gears of War. And that's, you know, what
Well,
most
I can tell the age of a person who's a fan of my work by saying what they grew up with, right? You know, I grew up with Unreal Tournament. I grew up with Jazz Jackrabbit. I, you know, yep. You know, Lawbreakers deserved a better shot, that kind of stuff, right? But yeah. So you came up and said hi, I'm assuming?
Yeah, I came up, I said hi, I was like, hey, like, I don't mean to bug you, like, I just wanted to say something, but, like, I love Jazz Jackrabbit, and I remember you were so stoked. You were so stoked. Again, I assume that most people are like, oh, like, coming up, hey, I love Gears and everything, but yeah. I remember we shot the shit about Jazz Jackrabbit for, like, a brief moment, and I was like, internally, that was such a crazy full circle moment for me, especially with Jazz being the first game I've ever played in my life and then coming up in the industry and making, you know, the success that I had and then meeting you and having it be such a weird full circle moment. That was so surreal.
I'm happy I wasn't an asshole.
You were a good one.
Well, it's a funny thing. Like, you know, I'll never forget, you know, Tim Sweeney sent me the early version of that editor that Ariane Brisset, the Dutch programmer, had done. And it was going to be kind of like that old school game Turrican that was on the Amiga, right? And I wasn't that good of an artist ever. Like, I had to do, like, the majority of my artwork was really, really bad. And so I eventually partnered with Nick Stadler, who did the animations and everything like that. But the thing is, you know, I wanted to be in the industry so bad. And I will never forget the first time I cobbled together some graphics in my crudely drawn rabbit. And I had some sound effects of, like, the springs and things like that. And, like, that feeling of, like, creation, you know, like, and then on the seventh day he rested kind of vibe, right? actually, Sonya, you should tell the anecdote of that old disc that I sent you, by the way. That'd be really interesting to mention. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I still have it. Actually, I was going to dig it out, but I'm like, am I allowed to say that I have this?
I mean, it's whatever. But the thing is, you found some obscure other game art that, like, nobody knew what it was. And you'd sent it to me like, what the hell is this? And so
I have no idea what it was. Yeah, you had given me, like, an old floppy disk, and I had a floppy disk reader, and I was pulling this. It was kind of corrupted, but I pulled this weird game off of it, and it was like Harry, Jack, and something. And yeah. I have no idea what it was, but it was like this little dude and a side scroller. I have no idea, but I'm like, I found this weird gem lost in this, like, in this floppy disk, lost in time. It was unreal. It was good.
I don't know. The thing about the video game industry is it can be really good to you. It could also, like, you know, it attracts people who are essentially the developers. They're the ones who weren't going to prom usually. Right. Mm-hmm. And I describe it as kind of the land of misfit toys, but they just want to create, you know. It takes a certain kind of person that can sit in front of a computer for 12 hours a day and code or create an 8 trillion triangle character mesh. Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And just, you know, I have a soft spot for developers, you know, but we're in the world now where, you know, I honestly believe the era of the rock star game designer is dead. I really think if you look at your average kid right now, what do they want to do? Who do they want to be? They want to be a YouTuber or a TikToker or a streamer or an esports person, right? Mm-hmm. And the only thing that bothers me about that whole thing is when, you know, these people who are hustling, and I respect esports, I respect streaming, I respect all of it, when they start making money hand over fist more than the developers that created the content. Mm-hmm. And that's an industry problem. You know, and that's the thing is, you know, Tim Sweeney was very good to me. You know, the ample bonuses, things like that. Tim knew just to share and spread the wealth. Not a lot of studios are like that. You know, you keep hearing about Bobby Kotick's from Activision. It's just ridiculous amount of money he's getting, you know, and it's just like Call of Duty keeps cranking along. And, you know, the industry is good, but it also has its warts, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's interesting, too. I completely agree. And it's one of those things where I feel like, and I think this happens in kind of every creative industry. I think we saw this. You know, we're having a big revival right now in television because of these streaming services and this stuff. And now
Everything's a silo now.
Everything's a silo, right? And kind of, you know, everything old is new again and et cetera, and on and on. But I do think it's one of those things where things blow up and blow up and blow up and get big, 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 big. And then they can't sustain themselves. And then it kind of crumbles. And then you see what comes from the ashes here, like in a forest fire, are these little saplings and things that are springing up. A lot of my favorite ideas and a lot of my favorite games right now are indie games being made by these people, by one or two person teams.
Well, that was the bender that I went on my Switch, right? Like, you know, you know, I just downloaded Rain in Your Parade. I'd actually type up the list to remember it. I played Ruiner, top down shooter, really, really cool. Yeah. Cyberpunk vibe, Ghost Runner, first person ninja kind of game, really cool. And Hades was obviously, of course, great. It's amazing how, like, you know, there's a game I think on like PlayStation 5 that has that roguelike elements. That's a AAA. I can't recall. My wife's really interested in it. I can't remember.
Oh, is it Returnal? Yeah,
Returnal. Yeah. Is that it?
With an L. Yeah.
And the thing is, but Celeste is one of the best games of all time. Like, that is like, it's so funny because I love these brutal platformers, right? Like Shovel Knight and things like that, right? And like
Dead Cells. Yeah.
I learned years ago that if my palms get sweaty, it's a good game.
Right? I love that.
The sweat test. The sweat
test. And like, it was so funny because, you know, I'd sit there with my Switch playing Celeste, and Celeste's, I don't know if you played it, it's the most butt-clenching platform game.
Oh,
right? And you have vicious. To be surgical in that thing. And like, apparently there's a cheat mode where you can get extra jumps and everything to make the game easier. I'm like, no, fuck that.
Nah,
like,
nah.
We're going, you know, super deep into this, right? And just crushingly difficult. And I was talking on Twitter about, you know, people who make the Super Mario Maker levels, right? And it's become this like trolling thing where people are making these levels that are literally impossible to beat, right? And like, it's like, that's not the same as Celeste. Celeste has that perfect balance, that give and take, that crispness. And you know, I always said good game design is when you blame yourself for failing, not the game itself, right?
Wow,
and,
yeah.
And I finally went back to Super Meat Boy, and I got all the way through it until the last level, and I was like, no, I can't even. So that's literally that one thing. She's like, my wife's like, you need to beat Super Meat Boy. I'm like, no, I'm good. I got far enough. We're good.
Yeah.
So I guess on the train of Celeste and games that you feel have done really, really, really exceptionally well with game design, I guess in the last couple of years that have come out, what would you say has been most notable?
I think Hades is pretty fantastic. There's a game, I think it's called Underminer. It's kind of one of those roguelike ones, top down. That one is one of those ones where, you know, you die, you kind of, you know, repeat, live, die, repeat, you know, with the roguelike elements. But to be honest, I haven't been playing much AAA. You know, I honestly, my wife on her Xbox One, she got the, was it Outriders or whatever, the one by People Can Fly, which is supposed to be a pretty cool little loot and shoot. So we're going to fire that up. But these days I'm all just about, you know, dabbling in games in my PC and my Switch. You know, we don't even have the new consoles yet. You know, because also I have to figure out how we're going to fit them into our like server racks. That's going to be another task.
Right. It's a good problem to have.
I'm all about these just like little retro platform games like Shovel Knight and everything like that these days. And, you know, my favorite thing to do is, you know, now that we can go into public a bit, you know, vaccination buddies, is, you know, to just sit at a pub, you know, with a drink and just play my Switch. And Lauren's, you know, playing her Switch, or, you know, she's still on fucking Pokemon Go, by the way. She's like level 48.
Yes.
She has like two she has like two accounts, like, and two phones. It's ridiculous, man.
I love it.
And it's actually a funny thing. Like, you think about Pokemon as an IP, right? So I remember in my mid-20s, you know, first visiting my nephew who is like 8, and he's like, you know, going around the house like, we got to catch Pokemon. I'm like, what the fuck's this kid talking about, right? And then, you know, to be at E3 back in the day and to see that Volkswagen Bug that they made to look like Pikachu driving around the LA Convention Center.
Yeah.
Which apparently you could buy. It's not too expensive. There's a handful of, yeah, there's a handful of them out there.
And wow.
So you're like driving around town in a little Pikachu car, right?
That's so cool.
So then, you know, also like, you know, like she showed me the Pokemon, the first movie, bold move, by the way, to say that. And, you know, I'm a child of the 80s. And when Optimus Prime died, Optimus Prime was fucking dead. Right. Yeah. But in the Pokemon movie, when Ash dies, you know, Pikachu's tears revive him.
Yeah.
Right. And it's like,
they never die.
Yeah, this is the start of the everyone gets a trophy generation, damn it.
Yeah. that's the moment it started, yeah.
But so, for shits and giggles, my wife and I on Netflix has the first season of Pokemon. It's like 55 episodes or so. And so I did this thing like, you know, months ago, you know, when we were in lockdown, where I was like, you know, doing a recap and I'd like kind of like make notes every night, you know, like watching this. And, you know, we're basically going to dress as Jesse and James from Team Rocket for Halloween this year.
Yes.
And I have to do like the whole like, you know, Jesse, looks like we're in a little bit of trouble, you know.
I love it.
Can you please, just as a favor to Sonia and I, make a Broadway musical of Pokemon? Please, please, please.
That would be a no-brainer, right? Have you seen the Mean Girls musical?
I want to.
Oh, it's great. When the plastics first show up, it's like, you know, the music swells, and like I hadn't seen it, and like the crowd lost their shit, right? And so again, look it up on YouTube. It's fantastic. But it's like one of those things, like if Team Rocket were to come out, you know, like, you know, prepare for trouble and make it double, right?
Everyone, wah!
Exactly, you know, and with that hair.
Yeah, you could do even like a Lion King or an Avenue Q type thing where you could have, you know, you could actually have the Pokemon.
Well,
there.
The thing about musicals that I've learned is that, you know, I hate to use that term four quadrant, but, you know, it has to kind of play to the young and the old. And that's why shows like, you know, Phantom, Unrequited Love is universal, right? But you look at Dear Evan Hansen, you know, which is such an amazing show. I sobbed the entire time about a misanthrope that kills himself, and the kid who has anxiety, who's writing letters to himself, and there's a big misunderstanding where the kid's parents who killed himself assume that Evan Hansen knew the kid and were his friends, and it's a lie that spins out of control and everything like that. It plays to the kids and the parents, right? I always also say with Broadway, it also has to play with the Ohio crowd, right? Mm. And, you know, there's a musical that came out called Be More Chill, which is really targeted towards high school kids, but it really had a limited run on Broadway because it was just the high school kids, right? You know, and that's the thing. It's like one of the ones that I would love to see find a way to produce would be a Scott Pilgrim musical.
Oh,
I
think. Man.
But Scott Pilgrim's having a re-release in theaters right now because Edgar Wright's a genius and it did not get the fair shake that it deserved, right? Because it's a brilliant movie.
Yeah, and even the game too. Like the game is, I haven't played through it, but I've heard that it's fantastic. I bought it. I just haven't made the time to play it. And they didn't.
I think
they just,
it's kind of a Streets of Rage style brawler, right?
Yeah. And didn't they re-release it or have DLC or something recent? There was something recent.
Relaunched it. He also wrote this great book called Seconds, which is about a woman who has a restaurant and she, you know, tries to open a second spot and it's very heartfelt, very cool, you know, now that I'm in the restaurant business a bit. And he also did this bit called a comic book called Snot Girl, which is about this really pretty girl who's a fashion blogger. But when she gets nervous, she you know, snot comes out of her nose. and the art is just fantastic. And so, you know, I can geek out about video games all day long, but I'm just a lover of pop culture. And that's one of the reasons why I absolutely fucking love Comic-Con. Like Comic-Con for me is the culmination of everything and cosplay and, you know, TV, film, you know, video games, you know, comic books, all that nerdy stuff. And that's, you know, like when Comic-Con was canceled, when COVID hit, I was literally in tears.
By the way, I was at Comic-Con also. Conan did shows down there.
Conan got involved with Comic-Con. Late night hosts that are savvy understand that nerd and video game culture are big. That's why Conan, you know, enlisted you for the Clueless Gamer stuff.
That's right.
You know, it's a great way to reach, you know, the younger demographic. Like, you know, for the past 10 years, you know, they've all finally kind of woken up to that. Right.
Hey, Keurig coffee drinkers. Need a cold coffee with a bold flavor? Dunkin' Cold K-Cup Pods were specially crafted for cold coffee. Brew over ice straight out of the Keurig coffee maker for smooth, delicious Dunkin' taste you know and love. Find your next Dunkin' Cold coffee in the roasted coffee aisle.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
I mean, let's talk virtual reality. Do you have any interest in venturing into the VR space at all?
Well, so when Bosque was starting to crater a little bit, you know, we had a few VR pitches, like a couple ideas, right? One of the ideas was a game that was, did you ever see the movie, the Brad Pitt World War II movie Fury, about the tank crew?
Yes. Yeah.
It's fantastic. And it shows World War II as violent. I hate PG-13 World War II movies, right? basically, you know, it's about this tank crew. And I had this idea of like a VR tank crew, but the tanks are kind of like Zoids. Do you remember the old school kind of big walking cats that were robots, right? And so, but it was going to be dogs. So like, you know, you'd have like, not literally, right? But just, you know, kind of like AT-ATs, but kind of like, you know, five versus five versus five versus five, right?
Cool.
So it was called dog walkers. It stood for destructive ordnance on the ground, right? Had concept art done for things like that, you know, like in VR, like, you know, tossing wrenches to repair things, you know, and all this crazy stuff, right? And then also the other one was a game called, we were codenaming Donuts, not like the, you know, Homer Simpson Donuts, but like, you know, inner tubes, right? And it was essentially kind of a VR version of the game Tubin, the old arcade game, whereas people had inner tubes, right? And I had this vision of like in an E3 or a PAX, seeing people sitting in actual inner tubes with like VR headsets on, like paddling furiously using the VR controls and like throwing, you know, shaking up and throwing beer cans at each other, smashing them in their heads, you know, skimming them across the water, trying to pop the other people's donuts and things like that. And everybody would their avatar would be like animals, right? And so, and basically it was also a stealth solution for seasonal affective disorder because it was going to be this bright, sunny river because, you know, the winters in North Carolina aren't too bad, but I do get it, you know, because somehow Monday's always fucking rainy. I don't know how they do that. So I found, you know, when I was actively involved with, you know, VR, full disclosure, I was fortunate enough to be an investor in Oculus, which was the greatest investment of my entire adult life. But to actually put a VR headset on and to be on a beach in the middle of a dreary winter day really does actually help. Yes. And so the thing is we were asking for funding for the VR games for about $3 to $5 million, which for a video game budget is not much. and all the powers that be, that, you know, Sony and HTC and whatnot and Oculus, they're like too rich for my blood. And I'm sitting here going like, guys, you have more money than God. You want the Ready Player One metaverse. That's what everybody's gunning for. You're not going to get that. Beat Saber is cool, but it's, I like that. That's what you're, the main thing you're advertising. Like, where's my social, shared social experience? Where's the World of Warcraft for VR? You know, that's what we need to kind of get to. Right. And, you know, I don't want to, my main thing is I don't want to sweat in VR. You know, I don't want my headset getting disgusting, you know,
right.
I like my VR experiences to be somewhat leisurely. Right. So, you know, so the room behind me, it used to be our formal dining room, you know, like that you'd basically never use. And so I'm like, we have a kitchen table over there. Why the fuck are we going to use this? Right.
Yeah.
And so we shipped the table. So my wife's brother and her sister-in-law. And so now it's just this void in the house where, you know, for VR. And one of my favorite things to do with VR is to, and I hate to, it sounds vulgar, but it's to pop people's VR cherry. You know, like people who've never done VR.
That is
like,
one of my, I think I tweeted it kind of recently. One of my top favorite things of all time is putting someone in VR for the very first time. I put somebody's mom in the Quest 2 a couple weeks ago for the
in
first
VR
time.
Face.
Yeah, no, it's unreal. And I only put her in the loading screen where you're kind of in this, like, I don't know how to explain it.
It's kind of the void, right?
Yeah, it's kind of a void, but you're in this, I don't know, sandy looking loungy area. There's like egg chairs and a beautiful sky and everything. And I just loaded her in there just to kind of grasp the concept and look around and just being blown away at that. It's so surreal.
My thing, my gateway for it initially is that little Oculus Story Studio thing, Henry, about the little little porcupine who just wants to be hugged.
Yeah,
and it's so, it's narrated by, I think, Elijah Wood, and it's just utterly charming. And, you know, just I love putting people in it and seeing their reaction. But again, like I don't have the Quest 2. I hear it's great, and you know the thing about VR is, you know, there's always all these gateway problems with it, you know, like in regards to, you know, the tethering and the setup and, you know, you get the Vive towers behind me and things like that. And, you know, way back in the day, you know, Brandon Uribe, who was, you know, one of the guys running Oculus, you know, he showed me a prototype where you could basically, you know, take an actual like Samsung phone and strap it to your face as kind of low cost, low key VR. And that's the other problem with VR is all of the people who just slap out crappy VR experiences, right? And because, you know, VR, when it works, is transcendent. It's amazing. But there's a lot of people out there like, oh, you still don't have your VR stomach. And, you know, Jason Rubin, you know, over there was basically saying like all these little roller coasters and all these jump scare things, like they're not good for VR, you know, like and the problem is, again, you have this culture of, you know, YouTubers and, you know, like PewDiePie was built on, you know, jump scare stuff with Slenderman. Oh, don't you knock at me. This is Slenderman, that kind of stuff. Right. You know, and overacting, overreacting on YouTube. Right. It's its own industry. The thumbnails I cannot stand, by the way. VR kind of fed into that a little bit because like, give me a roller coaster, or, you know, give me the big jump scares. And oh, my God, I'm going to overact and get, you know, get more hits and things like that. But, you know, VR should be a shared social transcendent experience as opposed to a scary, in my opinion, a scary or a nauseous inducing kind of experience, right?
You've had a hand in so many things and so many projects that have touched people, you know, even like Sonya with Jazz Jackrabbit. What does that mean to you?
That's the thing, is it's the sense of community. It's kind of like, you know, when I worked in video games and, you know, and people getting tattoos of things. It's actually, my Facebook memories reminded me of, like, there was a Kotaku editor that had a Jazz Jackrabbit tattoo.
And I'm not like, far off of getting one. Don't worry. It's around the corner.
Sonya, if you do it, I will pay for it.
You heard it here.
Yeah, just don't.
It's a neck tattoo I'll throw in also.
Yeah, just don't get it on your lower back.
Yeah, there we go.
Damn it. That's where I was going to go.
But yeah, I mean, even like as much as Lawbreakers didn't get traction, you know, grand opening, grand closing, as Jay-Z said, there's still a few people out there that have a tattoo about it. People, you know, meeting online in a game that you created and then, you know, becoming best friends or falling in love, or, you know, like, I don't know how many like soldiers have talked to me about how weirdly Gears of War helped with their PTSD. Right. And like, you know, and, you know, like I said, you know, like Idiocracy, I like money. Right. But it's like, that other stuff is really what makes it all worthwhile. Right.
Yeah. That's the real payment. I mean, and again, it's like, I think at the end of the day, you know, I think the three of us could just agree that being creative and being able to make something that other people connect with on an emotional level is like the greatest gift. I mean, that is, I feel grateful for that every day.
Being a Broadway nerd, I'm an enormous Rent fan. It's like every other day I wake up with Rent in my head, you know, like Love You, I know almost all the lyrics to Love You, Bohemian, everything like that.
Awesome.
But you know, it's basically like, you know, the opposite of war isn't peace, it's creation. right? Which is what Jonathan Larson, and that whole story is so bittersweet because he passed from HIV AIDS related complications right before the show opened. And yeah, so I mean, that's the thing about video games and musicals, though. There's actually a fair amount of overlap. It's a miracle that a musical can go on without a hitch 8 times a week, with the amount of the lighting effects, the smoke, the choreography, the costumes, the props, you know, the singing, of course, the live orchestra, things like that. It's the same thing with the video games. The fact that, you know, the characters, the outfits, the music, you know, the interactivity.
I agree. Well, Cliff, this has been such a thrill for us. And we're almost out of time, but we love to end every interview with our guest's favorite game and least favorite game. So,
okay,
like your best game.
I'm still disappointed. I thought this was going to be Hot Ones.
Oh, we can, I mean.
Well, I'll take shots of hot sauce. Yeah,
exactly. No, seriously, right? I got macaroons. I don't know. So favorite game of all time. I've said this before. I've said it a million times, is Tetris. Tetris was fun when it first came out. Tetris will be fun 3,000 years from now. And it's fun fact, when I first started dating Lauren, she was actually really good at Tetris on the DS. And I didn't know what the T-spins were. Right. And so, you know, I was, you know, again, in the Nintendo World Championships when I was 15 for Tetris.
Right.
And I came in second in Massachusetts, and the kid who beat me was from Jersey. That was some bullshit. And, but basically, like, you know, I knew I was in love with her when we were sitting at a resort in Mexico, both playing, you know, versus on our DSs with Tetris. Aww. Right. She was like the only person who could beat me. Right.
Oh, my God.
And then the worst game ever is a game, a really rare little game on the original Nintendo Entertainment System called Athena. It was a side scroller where you're supposed to be like Athena, and it was like buggy, clunky. Like when I was younger, I used to pride myself on being able to beat any video game. Like I beat Ghosts and Goblins, Ghouls and Ghosts, Deadly Towers, all that stuff. Like I literally had like a list on the back of my bedroom door, and I have my Nintendo, original Nintendo up there, which Jeremy Sneed did a documentary about Nintendo where I show it off. And I did hash marks on the side of the Nintendo, like a fighter pilot, right? To show off the games that I beat, but I could never beat fucking Athena. And it's still to this day, like the worst game like ever made. Another pet peeve of mine, by the way, is a barcade open in town. And when it first opened, the majority of the games were on emulators, and the controls were kind of shit. Mm-hmm. And then it didn't matter. The place was crushing it because people who didn't really care about the games would go and just kind of be half hammered and play them.
Yeah.
I went to play Q-Bert, and you couldn't move diagonally. What's the point of Q-Bert?
That's the entirety of the game.
Exactly. It's like Mario and you can't jump, for fuck's sake.
That's heartbreaking.
Exactly. But yeah.
So. Oh my God. Unreal.
Yeah, no, this has been fun, guys.
This has been so good. And when I finally go to get my Jazz Jackrabbit tattoo, I'll hit you up.
I will absolutely Venmo you the money.
Man, you know, I just love talking to people like Cliff who are just so inspiring. I mean, man, that guy is just, he's doing it all. He's doing it all. It's his world. We're just living in it, you know?
We are. And he is doing it all, including potentially paying for my future Jazz Jackrabbit tattoo. So thanks so much, Cliff, for my new ink and for joining us today. And make sure to follow him on Twitter at TheRealCliffyB.
And now stick around, because when we come back, we are joined by 13 Reasons Why star Devin Druid to get the scoop on what games make him rage quit. We'll be right back.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are so excited to welcome back to the podcast one of our very favorite people, Devin Druid. Hey, man, what's up?
Hey, everybody.
Hey.
What's up, man?
We thought we'd have you back today to discuss one of the things that Sonia and I love most, which is rage quitting.
Great. Fantastic.
Now, Devin, do you rage quit? What's your experience? Do you get furious at games? Are you chill?
Yeah, I was excited to have you back because I know that you're like the sweetest baby angel, and I cannot imagine you getting angry at all.
Oh. Interesting. Mind if I subvert your expectations a little?
Please.
I mean, no. Okay, so I'll be honest. I don't rage quit as much anymore. I definitely did a lot when I was younger and a little, I don't know. One thing that I think I've come to learn, even outside of video games, one of my biggest, I guess, irritants, like things that really annoys me out of anything, is a lack of consistency. So I've realized that like consistency is like such a big part of my life, and having like, you know, and so long story short, when I have a video game that gives me a set of rules and then does not adhere to those rules consistently, I will get annoyed. If you tell me to press a button at X time in order to do something and I do it and it doesn't work, I get frustrated. So, yeah.
Is there like a good game that you that comes to mind when...
I feel like recently, I mean, I played a lot of Fall Guys when that was super popping months ago.
Man.
And I feel like... But that's also frustrating too, because it's like I can't blame the game entirely, because that's the whole like premise of the game. Like the whole thing is supposed to be like wonky. It's supposed to be like
a little loose, yeah. A little loose.
Exactly. There was a game that I played a little bit called Totally Accurate Battlegrounds.
Oh, Battle Simulator? Totally Accurate.
No, it was like a PUBG.
Oh, interesting.
Like April Fool's game. It's this company that it's like this developer company that always makes like April Fool's games.
Okay.
I guess they will
very specific. I love that.
Yeah.
Though.
They basically they will take like whatever games are super popular at the time, and they'll make their own crazy wonky one with like crazy physics. Your character will like walk around looking like Gumby and looking like a wacky inflatable arm flailing tube man sort of thing. And so I guess part of Fall Guys kind of reminded me of that, where it's everything, the physics and everything, it's designed for like you to have fun and kind of do its one thing, but also like be silly and kind of flop over, like you're trying to jump and sprint in GTA and your character just falls over.
You're just running sideways, and then just straight in.
Exactly.
But the thing of Fall Guys is like, it's, while it is made to be like that, at the same time you're like, but I know what I need to do.
Right.
It's WSAD and
it's
jump.
So easy.
That's it. I mean, I guess it's a grab too, but
yeah, it's crazy. Yeah.
It seems so simple.
It's sadistic that a game with loose physics and like bendy bodies is also a competition game, is also like a battle royale.
Yes,
game, makes you, because the thing is like I what's interesting is like in a sport, if you play a sport, you can hone your skills. But in Fall Guys, I feel like there's a ceiling to which even like the top of the top tier players can only be so good, because
exactly, and then the rest is luck. The rest is down to luck.
Yeah, it's really luck,
which is like a recipe for psychosis.
Yeah, and that's the thing that then starts to make me rage quit, is this thing where it's like I want to succeed on my own merit without, you know, other factors jumping in on it.
Yeah,
which is where I don't know. I feel like that's kind of the one of the larger discrepancies between video games and then physical games or sports or something like Jenga.
Right. Yeah. Oh man.
Devin, I know that off the top you did allude to maybe we've grown in our gamer worlds, and we've come a little bit more calm, but it hasn't always been that way.
No. I've never gotten to the point of breaking a controller though.
That's good.
Yeah. I've never broken a controller. I was one of those kids that for some reason would, when I was a really little kid, before I understood how money worked and how replacing expensive things worked, I was one of those kids that would like chew the rubber off of like my DualShock controllers.
What?
I know, everyone listening is going to be like, you are the worst type of person. But I don't, you know, I would just have a little chunk of rubber out of my like PS2 joystick. Yeah, it was horrible. And then imagine trying to, like, I remember trying to play, it might have been like Final Fantasy VII or something. It was Final Fantasy VII. At the time on my PS2, I had a PS2 Slim. It had a horrible thing where you had to contort the power connector at like a 90 degree angle and hold it in so that it would stay turned on.
Sick.
It was to the point where you had to take the power cable, wrap it around the entire console so that it would stay
to keep
in
it tight.
Place.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I've had one of those.
It was the worst. Yeah. I hated it. But it was, yeah, like Final Fantasy VII, Kingdom Hearts 2. I remember trying to fight against, there was a member of Organization 13 called Luxord who has all these cards. Oh my gosh. And I probably talked about it last time I was here too, because it's just such a visceral, triggering moment for my gamer life. Of there's a character in Kingdom Hearts 2 named Demix. He's a boss that you fight, and he has a sitar that he plays, and he conjures water into these enemies that you have to battle, and there's like 100 of these water enemies that you have to defeat in 60 seconds, 90 seconds, whatever it is. And just, I don't know who the voice actor is. I should look it up because he's still haunting my dreams. And the character just goes like, dance, water, dance! And just like attacks you. And if you don't complete it, you just have to keep going. And the quote just keeps replaying. And that's probably the worst part of those boss battles. It's just that you're like, I know what you're saying. It's when you get to the boss fight and there's that unskippable cutscene. And you're like, I know. I've already been killed 5 times. I know what I'm doing.
You're like, I've been here before.
I know what you're going to say.
I already know. Dance, water, dance. And you're trying to bite. You're trying to fight them. And your finger's slipping off the joystick because you chewed half it off. And
yeah.
The whole experience.
I will say that's something, you know what? It's interesting you bring that up, Devin, because that's something that I'm just now realizing that really makes me want to rage quit. That, and we haven't really talked about this, is unskippable cutscenes. That might be the worst. That might be the worst. Like, you know, and I think about things like, you know, when we taped a Clueless Gamer with Skyrim, that first cutscene, which is now a meme where you're like in the
meme
wagon,
one, yeah.
You know, like, oh, I see you've woken up or whatever. That's 15 minutes
weary
long.
Weary traveler.
Yeah, you're weary traveler. Yeah. And you can't skip it. And we had to keep playing that over and over. And it's just, the unskippable cutscenes are awful.
It's so
at least
bad.
It makes sense on older gens because they can use the cutscenes to start rendering out levels and stuff in the background.
Right.
But in 2021, if I'm not able to skip your cutscene, I don't know what you're doing wrong.
Yeah. Listen, even back in, when was Ocarina of Time? Was it 98? 99? Yeah. Something like that? Even back then.
I was born?
I'm old. When you're playing, I can't remember where it is, but you talk to that owl and it's such a long dialogue. It's like 15 different sections that you have to skip through. And then if you're just hammering through it and button mashing it and you accidentally press A again, it just goes through the whole thing all over again. It is so
annoying.
That's
when you need like a confirmation screen. Are you sure you would like to redo this dialogue sequence?
Yeah, exactly.
Just triple check.
Wow. Well, consistency and unskippable cutscenes. Frankly, mm-hmm. By the way, those are great. Like I'm realizing you're awakening a new parts of anger inside myself.
Be consistent.
I know.
I love it. Well, that'll do it for this week. If you have any questions, video game requests, or you just want us to prescribe you a video game, write in at goodgamenicetry on Twitter or use hashtag GGNT. We'll see y'all next time.
Good Game Nice Try is produced by Jen Samples and Nick Liao. Our executive producers are Joanna Solitaroff, Adam Sachs, and Jeff Ross. Engineering by Will Becton, with engineering and sound design by Chester Guasta. Music by John Danick.
This has been a Team Coco production.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.